Welcome to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
It's my honor to announce the 2020 Kia Most Valuable Player is Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis, good evening. Congratulations to you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
The trophy's right behind me. I'm going to ship it to Greece.
No, don't do that. Just keep it. I'm gonna come get it when the season starts.
Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by NBA champ Richard Jefferson and the Hall of Famer, our senior writer, Jackie McMullen. Jackie, by the way, just re-upped with ESPN, and we are all more fortunate for it.
Thanks, Rach.
We just heard there from back-to-back MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo. Richard, how bittersweet do you think this is for Giannis? He was on NBA TV right after he talked to the commissioner, saying, I don't really want to be called MVP until you can call me champion.
Well, and I think he's following the great players before him, the other MVPs that strove, you know, and just so much to get a championship. And he knows the individual numbers are always going to be there because that's just the type of player he is. But he wants to be a champion. He's going to fight to be a champion. And those are the type of MVPs you want, where they want that recognition, but they ultimately want to be champions.
Yeah, I applaud Giannis for this, Rachel, for saying that. But let's remember, during the regular season, he absolutely deserved this award. Now, let's not lose sight of that. 30 points a game in just under 31 minutes a game. That's an efficient superstar who, by the way, averaged 13.6 rebounds and 5.5 assists. So I understand where he's coming from, but Giannis should make no apologies to anybody. He earned this award. He was the best player in the regular season. Now the playoffs, different story.
Absolutely. And that's the distinction, right? And I think that's sometimes what frustrates fans. And I voted for Giannis for MVP. Jackie, it sounds like you voted for Giannis for MVP.
I did.
I have said on TV the entire season, hey, with the way the stats are going, I am voting for Giannis for MVP because the award right now is for who had the best statistics in the regular season. That is what the award is for. The award is not for who is the best player in the NBA. And it seems like fans really want there to be a distinction between that, which is why I've been saying on television for 5 years now, we need to separate out these awards. And it is not to give people a participation trophy. It is not just to give Shaq or Kobe or LeBron or maybe even Michael Jordan more MVPs because they should just have more. It is about that those are two different things. And the NFL and the NHL and Major League Baseball have all tweaked their awards in the last three decades to account for the fact that who puts up the best stats in the regular season is not sometimes who is the best player in the NBA. And sometimes a guy could get both, right? That is available for some people. But especially as players age, and we did see this with MJ and we've seen it with LeBron, it is not smart for them to do their absolute best, to use all of their effort up in the regular season because they have their eyes on a different prize. And I just feel like the fan reaction to this, particularly this season, particularly this month, particularly today, it is just an outgrowth of what, frankly, I've been talking about for 5 years, which is we need to make better decisions about what these awards are about, have everyone understand that. And if people want to know who's the best player in the league, we need to make MVP about that instead of who has the best regular season. These are my theories. We can discuss that and so much more coming up later in the show. We will also be discussing about how LeBron will react to being named MVP runner-up for the fourth time in his career. There's still a lot to talk about on this, but first we got to get to what's going on right here in Orlando in the playoffs. You hear it all the time from fans, coaches, the internet. Go get you a Marcus Smart. Or I wish I had a whole team full of Marcus Smarts. Smart, of course, is not the best player on the Celtics roster or even an all-star, but he is Boston's heart and hustle. So it was a big deal last night when he began screaming loudly enough inside the post-game locker room for those standing outside to hear when there was heavy clanging and banging and then finally Smart exiting the locker room cursing. And I don't want to make what happened last night into some cataclysmic event the Celtics chemistry will never recover from. If you've been around the NBA long enough or Heck, even if you just watched The Last Dance, you have frankly seen dozens of these kinds of tirades after emotional losses. But what Smart did last night matters, because the Celtics are now down 0-2 to the Heat in these Eastern Conference Finals, thanks to blown double-digit leads in each game. And if no one in the Boston locker room gets angry about that now, by the time they do, it will be too late. Take a look at just last night's second half. Boston was up 13 and then literally began to give the game away with turnover after turnover after turnover after turnover after turnover after turnover after turnover. 7 turnovers in just the third quarter alone. The Celtics scored a grand total of 4 baskets in that same window. On the other side, forget the rest of the Heat, just Bam Adebayo hit 7. By the way, I was the sideline reporter for last night's game. That was fun.
Brad, such a swing. You guys came into this half with a 13-point lead. What happened?
Well, we stopped playing on both ends.
Yeah, that went well. To Brad's credit, he did answer my second question more thoroughly, talking about what the Celtics had to do differently to close this game. The problem is that his team did not then go do any of those things. The Celtics seem to have little answer to the Heat playing zone, something that could hardly be categorized as a surprise or a gimmick, since Miami did it more this past season than any other team in the NBA, by a lot. And in the final minutes, with everything on the line, it was the Heat who did all the hustling. Watch Jimmy Butler poke the ball from Kemba Walker, then dive to the sideline to keep the possession, then keep going toward the basket to receive the ball back for 2. Then with about 90 seconds to go, Butler again breaking up the inbounds. Another 2 comes right here for Miami. Or watch this with about 30 seconds on the clock. Jay Crowder misses. There are 4 Boston jerseys under the basket, but guess who comes up with the ball? And you wonder why Marcus Smart was upset? The Athletic reported that at one point in the locker room, it was Smart and Jaylen Brown who were really getting into it, with teammates having to separate them. But no one says that the two ever actually got physical. And ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that, in fact, by later in the night, Smart, Brown, Kemba, and Jason Tatum all met with Stevens to get back on the same page. Obviously, even in the arena post-game, it seemed like Brown could appreciate where Smart was coming from.
You know, he plays with passion. He's full of fire. And that's what I love about him most, to be honest. You know, he has that desire and that will, and we need him to continue to have that, you know. It's ups and downs with families all the time, but, you know, we embrace each other for who we are.
You know, the irony in all of this is that it's the Heat who this season have been open about the fact that they yell at each other all the time. In fact, here is Jimmy Butler from just last night.
We look each other in the eye and we tell each other when we're on some BS. Spoke's going to do it. I'm going to do it. Jay's going to do it. Tyler's going to do it. Duncan's going to do it all the way down the line.
You know how everyone's been saying they'd love a team full of Marcus Smarts? It seems like there actually already is one in this series. It's just that so far, that team is not the Celtics. It's the Miami Heat. Richard, this post-game argument that the Celtics had, do you think it is helpful or hurtful to the team as they move forward in the Eastern Conference Finals?
1,000% helpful. Now, if this was after one game, if this was game one, then you could be like, okay, this is a little overreaction. But understand this. Go back and look at how they've played over the last two series. Up 2-0, blow a lead that allows for Toronto to win that game. They should have been up 3-0. Then that series goes to 7. So they squeak that out, and now they're here down 0-2 with blown leads in the second half. They need a fire injection, right? Look. Kemba Walker can say, look, I need to play better. I've been playing terrible. He's trying to motivate himself and trying to tell his teammates that he's locked in. Then they lose again. And then Marcus Smart is basically like, hey, this is unacceptable. We've seen it with Draymond Green. We've seen it with players throughout history. We saw it in The Last Dance. If you're going to be on a great team, there is going to be conflict. There was conflict in the Cavs. There's conflict with Shaq and Kobe. There's always conflict on great teams. It doesn't mean that it needs to be negative. It just means that you got to fire up sometimes.
Honestly, to me, everybody was in character here, Rachel and Richard. I know Marcus very well. His passion is his greatest strength and sometimes his biggest weakness. I love this. Now, maybe it could have been done a little differently. I don't know what went inside. I don't know what kind of things Marcus Smart threw. Maybe some of them were inappropriate. But I like that he did it. This is who he is. I also like Jaylen Brown clapping back and saying, hey, we've got to stay together. Also in character. Remember, it was a young Jaylen Brown that had the courage to clap back at Kyrie Irving when he was singling out the younger players. Now, some people have said to me today, where's Kemba Walker in this? Isn't he the leader? Kemba Walker is the king of positivity. To ask him to all of a sudden get Clint Eastwood on everybody or Jack Nicholson, that's unauthentic. And he doesn't do that. He's the king of positivity. He will stay that. Jason Tatum puts his head down and plays harder. All four of their biggest players, their top players, to me, were right in character. And I can tell you this, too, that when Jaylen Brown was struggling at the beginning of last year, his biggest supporter, his unwavering supporter, was Marcus Smart. Trust me. These guys are fine.
Absolutely. Jackie, knowing what you know about all of those individual personalities, what do you think that late night meeting with Brad Stevens was like that Woj reported out?
I'm sure it was more about Marcus Smart saying, we can't have three on nuns. We can't have these guys going to the basket. We got to play harder. We got to be more physical. It's Kemba telling the young guys, because he's been a great mentor to both of them, you guys can't put your head down now. You've got to keep doing what you're doing. I will be better. And Brad Stevens saying to all of them, the effort has to be there. I can accept missed shots. I can accept an occasional missed defensive assignment, but I cannot accept lack of effort. I cannot accept getting beat on the boards. I cannot accept three on nuns in any playoff game.
And people don't fully understand, and including myself, you don't fully understand how exhausting and how hard you have to work to win a championship. And look, if you look at other series in this postseason, you look at the way Denver has come back in multiple series. It's because there's been teams that have all of a sudden just kind of taken their foot off that gas. And then when the other team gains momentum, there is no crowd here to motivate you to kind of get things going. It's all within yourself. And so I think this was a great, great time for it, because if you try and do it down 3-0, you're putting yourself in a position to do something that's never been done. If you're going to have a blow up, it is to do it after being down 2-0.
Absolutely. And the Celtics have lost three of their last four games. So they just have to figure out a way to stop this momentum. All right, coming up, we will go to the other side, the Western Conference. LeBron James says that his respect for the Nuggets is, quote, out of this world. Will that translate into game one success for the Lakers? We preview the Western Conference Finals next. You're watching The Jump.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
Cue me in, do the clapping, and be like, action. It's a make or miss league.
Maybe a little more funny than that.
I don't know what am I make or missing? It's a make or miss league. Cut that.
And that's Jimmy. Miss subtlety! Drake won his basketball league and celebrated only like Drake can. This was a rec league, Richard.
Hey, look, all I know is I have guys in my fantasy football league that buy themselves rings after they win. I have not won, so I have not purchased a ring. But look, they take these rec leagues, these fantasy football. It's real. It's serious.
Look at this. I did not see the stream because I was watching an actual basketball game. But I understand. Someone said that KD was, like, commenting on this game. That's what he had going on here. It's impressive.
Goodness gracious.
I'm with you, Jack. I'm telling you,
when our rec league, old lady league won, you know what we did? We went out and everybody bought us a beer.
There you go.
Yeah.
Boom. Made creativity. Tyler Hero driving in.
Oh, is this the little?
Makes the pass, woo! Little yo-yo woo! Dribble. Look at woo! This.
Went to the line.
Bam, wow. For the and one alley oop. I mean, Jackie kind of hit him with the CP3, and he's only a rookie.
Man, I'll tell you, that was a great play, but I was so much more impressed with the way he rebounds the ball in traffic and the way he moves without the ball. This kid is something special.
He is something special. That ball handling skills that they didn't know he had this. They knew he was a shooter, knew he was a combo guard, but this is what makes him unique, and which means, you know, he's going to be a problem for a long time.
Look, his coach at Kentucky, John Calipari, said he has the heart of an elephant, except he didn't say heart, and I'm just going to let you all figure out the rest of that. Miss gathers. Bam! Grabs the offensive rebound, finds Duncan Robinson in the corner. And we got to talk more about this kid. Duncan doesn't even dip down for the gather, lets it fly. Richard, could you do this
I kind of learned something like this in San Antonio. You're taught to, like, because if you have to go down and up, mm-hmm. that takes off a split second that allows a defender to get there. So they teach you to catch the ball, knees bent, already, and the ball has to be in your pocket. Yep. And then you just, Danny Green had mastered this. He was very, very good at it. And a lot of that skill set was learned in San Antonio. And great shooters do it. They just have that quick ability to go straight up.
You know, I saw this, and the first thing I thought of was Ray Allen in the corner against San Antonio, remember? Same quick motion, no heels down. Great shooters do that. Duncan's worked at this. He's worked really hard
it's
at this.
Amazing. And by the way, same jersey, Jackie. Yeah. Make desperation, third quarter. Kelly Olynyk, against his old team, takes the inbound, heaves it before the buzzer, and it drops. Jackie, this has got to be pretty demoralizing, right?
Well, it's pretty tough because it was good defense, but I think Richard will probably tell you the most demoralizing thing is when there's a rebound and you're tipping, and you knock it into your own basket. I think that's worse, right, Richard?
Yeah, that's one of those ones where, you know, you get a little frustrated, but this is demoralizing only from this standpoint, as you're just like, okay, they're going to make this now, or he's making these threes. Like, we can count for all of these other guys, but when Kelly Olynyk is making turnaround, bank threes off the glass, look at that. At the end of the shot clock, too. Yeah, that'll take a little bit of something out of you.
Missed deadlines. This was fantastic. Shout out to the Nuggets Twitter account. They sent out a bandwagon application form.
Where's mine?
Richard, your name needs to be scrawled at the top of this. I'm supposed to ask you if this is America's team, but this is your team now.
This is the team that I believe in them. I believe that they believe, and that's the cool thing about it. And so, yeah, jump on the bandwagon, jump on the Jokic bandwagon. I got no problems with that. We got more room. I'm like in the middle of the pack. There's room in the back.
There you go. I got to tell you, I jumped on the Jamal Murray bandwagon two years ago. I went down there, spent 6 days with the Nuggets. The vibe on that team was amazing. Tim Connolly, all homegrown staff, and Mike Malone, they feed off his energy. Count me in. I've already had a seat, though, so I'm good. My daughter lives there,
That's
too.
That's true. Absolutely. Yes, Jackie's been rooting for anything happening good in Colorado just so she can visit her family, and I will. And by the way, I could spend an entire hour bragging on Jackie McMullen, but if you have not gone back, Google, read the story she wrote on Jamal Murray. It is so exceptional because, as usual, Jackie has all the details, the relationship between him and his dad, the way Jamal grew up in Canada, the drills that they did. You will understand what happens in this Western Conference Finals better if you go find that story. So, public service announcement. All right, I want to stick with the Western Conference Finals and his media availability yesterday. LeBron James made it a point to show the Nuggets a lot of respect. In addition to complimenting the passing of Jokic, he emphasized that the Lakers are not overlooking what Denver brings to the table. Take a listen here.
Very resilient, very confident, very driven, and a very well-coached team. And it takes a lot of energy, effort, and a lot of desperation to be able to come back from a 3-1 deficit. And they did it twice. So the respect level is out of this world for what we have for this ball club. And that's how we're going to this series, understanding what they're capable of and where they stand.
LeBron James, of course, knows exactly what it takes to come back from a 3-1 deficit.
That's right.
So does the man sitting next to me who was on that Cavaliers team in the finals, Richard Jefferson. The Lakers, not so successful in game ones in these playoffs. They've lost both their first couple rounds so far. So, Jackie, what do you think is more likely in game one of the West Finals? A Lakers blowout, which is what some people are predicting, or a Nuggets upset? We're not giving you the middle of the tight game. You got to pick one or the other.
I mean, I don't think the Lakers blowout makes much sense to me. I think the Lakers could win the game one, but I don't know about a blowout. I know the Nuggets have been blown out occasionally in games. It just doesn't feel like that kind of series to me. I can't wait for this series. And if I'm jumping on the Nuggets bandwagon, how can I pick a Lakers
club?
Come
on, Jackie, yeah.
I mean, I'll lose my membership. I'll lose my membership, won't I?
Yeah, that is accurate. And look, if you're going to ask me which one's more likely to happen, I'm going to say a Nuggets win. right? For this reason, one, Lakers don't necessarily play great in game one. When you look at the blowout that the Nuggets had in game one against the Clippers, they were coming off a 7-game emotional, you know, victory against Utah. So basically, I think they're going to be rested. The Lakers are going to do their normal feeling it out like they have. But the weird thing about this and why I believe the Nuggets have a chance and will win this in seven is that you can say that the Lakers get better as the series goes on, but so do the Nuggets. The Nuggets get better as this series goes on, and that's why I think it's going to be exciting.
See, the producers tried to make you guys push to the edges, and both of you were crafty enough. You figured out a way back. See, this is why they're on this show. They're both so good. All right. Another thing about all three people on this show, we all know and love Charles Oakley, retired enforcer, bon vivant, general man about town. Oak is joining us in this next break to talk about the cast of Dancing with the Stars, how playing in the NBA trained him for the big ballroom, and he'll give us a finals prediction here as well. Stay tuned. That's coming up next right here on The Jump.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Best Buy.
The WNBA playoffs roll on Sunday with the first of the best of five semifinals. The Suns squaring off against MVP Asia Wilson and the top-seeded Aces at 1 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. Then over on ABC, the Lynx take on Breonna Stewart and the Storm, both games streaming live on the ESPN app so you can watch from anywhere. And welcome back to The Jump, not just to all you watching at home, but to our next guest, known for being one of the top character guys in NBA history. And he's thrown a punch or two in his day, too. He played 19 NBA seasons, made the All-Star team in 94, two-time All-Defensive Team selection. But that's not what he's up to these days. He is now a cast member on season 29 of Dancing with the Stars. Tune in next Tuesday on ABC to check it out. And I am always so thrilled to be able to say this sentence. Charles Oakley joins The Jump. Thank you so much for being with us, Oak. I love this. I love the new look.
Thank you, thank you.
So how did this come about? How did you end up on Dancing with the Stars?
It's been on my mind. I've been calling and requests a couple times, but since I was just sitting around at home, and I think it was just great to do, give people energy, let people see me. I'm still out here trying to make people happy. That's all. It's great though. I'm having a good time.
Well, certainly you use your physical skills. I can see that. You've already been in great shape. But also, you know, we showed some highlights of you there coming in, and there might have been a few fists thrown, there might have been a few tussles. How did that prepare you, being in the NBA, prepare you for Dancing with the Stars?
Well, I guess condition, number one, and just being solid, you know, it's like learning plays, but it's tough. My partner, Emma, she's great. She's teaching me. I mean, just got to learn the routines. My thing is get the routines down. And just try to stay with the beat. The beat is important. So this week, is you'll see a big difference in my style, and I'll be more classic. You know, going more mid tempo. Songs will be a mid tempo. So we're gonna show out this week.
I love that. We were talking also before in the commercial break. Just the idea that you got to be disciplined, like being an athlete, right? You've got to be a leader, like being an athlete. I think it's not a coincidence that a lot of former athletes have done well on that show. Now, there are a bunch of other famous cast members this season, though, including Carol Baskin from Tiger King. Who is more dangerous on the dance floor? I'm going to make this just on the dance floor. Who is more dangerous on the dance floor, Carol Baskin or you, Charles Oakley?
Ooh, you know, ladies first, so... Carol Baskin's a nice lady. She speaks to me every time I see her. And, we have something in common. We got a good attitude. People always said things about you, but in life, you know what you endure and understand your physicality.
There you go. I do want to get you about the NBA because, of course, we have so much respect for your basketball knowledge, Oak. We've got the Heat, Celtics, yes. Nuggets, and Lakers left. Who is your pick? Which two teams do you think are going to make the finals, and who will win it all?
Well, Lakers have been my pick since day one. I did a lot of interviews before we went down to the bubble. In the East, Jimmy Butler in the Heat. He's showing what Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, you know, they get the type of player can fit together. They don't just get a player because he's in the draft. They get somebody who can willing to work willing to learn and dedicate themselves to the Miami Heat franchise. And you can see mm-hmm. how they run the franchise. Pat Riley did a great job down there.
Do you think that these Heat remind you at all of those 90s Knicks? I mean, you got Pat Riley involved.
Oh, yes. They've got a lot of, for the defense mindset, I think they move the ball better. It's a different ball game now. They don't run a lot of post-up. But at the end of the game, you know who their best player is. They go to Jimmy Butler and Dragon. They're their best two player. Bang, just, you know, defense like Lonzo Mourning did. They got everything. They got shooters. And, you know, Eric Spoelstra, I told him one time he was okay coach, but he's a great coach.
Well, thank you so much. I know what none of these teams have today. None of them have a Charles Oakley. We miss you, Oak. Best of luck, though, with this season on Dancing with the Stars. I cannot wait to watch this. It's going to be so good.
Thank you.
Coming up, everybody, what's the Celtics' approach to the next couple days after reported argument in the locker room after Game 2? Malika Andrews is going to join us to discuss that and more next on The Jump. First, though, here is our friend George Sedano with a fantastic essay on the legend, Pat Riley.
There's winning and there's misery. That's the phrase famously coined by Miami Heat president and living legend Pat Riley. The mantra for the franchise that he steered for 25 years.
I hated to lose. I always thought there would be severe consequences for me if I lost. I think at times I tried to conjure up inside of me an emotion that was unhappy because it made me miserable because that's what I took to my players every day.
During one 9-season stretch in Miami, the Heat went to 5 finals appearances and accumulated 3 championships.
It's back-to-back titles for the Heat.
But with all that winning, there's been some misery too.
You want to trend something? I'm pissed, okay? So go ahead, get it out there.
Summer of 2014, LeBron James left Miami to return to Cleveland. Next, Chris Bosh was forced into early retirement after an unfortunate health issue with blood clots. And then, the best player in franchise history, Dwayne Wade, and the Miami Heat decided to part ways via free agency. Even Riley himself admitted Miami had slipped. But out of that misery came a new incarnation of winning, building this Heat team on drafted and undrafted players alike. And then, with an assist from Wade, Riley landed his new Minister of Culture, Jimmy Butler. One season later, Riley, Spoelstra, Butler and company have found themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals facing the Boston Celtics. Now, everyone is talking about Riley and the Heat culture.
If you don't compete defensively, you don't give extra effort plays, you're not going to play. That's just how it goes when you play for the Heat.
We've heard Tyler Hero say, he's like, we just follow Jimmy Butler.
A lot of the young guys in 4 a.m. workouts, that's just a different level.
That's worked out for the Miami Heat so far.
Riley describes the culture this way, as being the hardest working, best conditioned, most professional, unselfish, toughest, meanest, nastiest, most disliked team in the NBA. And the Godfather always leads by example.
Pat Riley, I mean, you and I, we go way back. You are just competitive as I am.
Riley was once in the business of coaching the Showtime Lakers through a bitter 80s rivalry against Danny Ainge and the Celtics. Then years later, now a Celtics executive, Ainge criticized then-Miami forward LeBron James on a local Boston radio show. Riley made it personal, issuing a statement through a Miami team spokesman that said, quote, Danny Ainge needs to shut the f*** up and manage his own team. He was the biggest whiner going when he was playing, and I know that because I coached against him. It's Riley's kind of culture that has driven the Heat to 8 conference finals and now sit one series away from Miami's 6th NBA finals during Riley's tenure. At 75, one thing is always clear. Pat Riley has made a culture of turning misery into winners.
We'll have Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Celtics and Heat tomorrow night. It's at 8:30 Eastern. NBA Countdown is going to get you started. ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Here is where we currently stand in this series. Just a little refresher for you.
The Miami Heat take a 2-0 lead here in this best of 7 conference final. The amazing Heat playoff run continues.
What happens in the locker room, we got to stay in the locker room.
Just a lot of emotions flying around. That's it.
It was nothing. It was nothing.
I'm a pop star, not a doctor. Calling my phone like I'm locked up. Now stop from the plane to the helicopter. Yeah.
This series is far from over. We got to get ready for game three.
Welcome back to The Jump. We now welcome in Malika Andrews, who is also down here in Orlando inside the bubble. Malika, outside that Celtics locker room, what was it like listening to it in real time, and how will the Celtics approach the next few days? Honestly, that's my bigger question, because you've been covering this team not just last night. I want to give you credit. You have been down here since the beginning. First person, first reporter in the bubble. So you've been with this team day to day. And I just want to know how you think what you heard last night is going to morph over the next 2 days to Saturday night.
Well, Rich, you know where the barrier is, about 25 feet from the mouth of the locker room. That's where I was standing with our friend Gary Washburn, who works at the Globe, when we started to hear just yelling, some screaming, some swearing coming out of the locker room. I saw Marcus Smart leave the locker room, turn towards the restroom, and he was still swearing. But I want to be clear, there were other players yelling. He's just the only one that I saw. In terms of how this can impact the group going forward, I think a couple of things. Everyone on this panel knows just how fiery, how much heart, how much soul this group has, and that's part of the reason that they're good. That's part of what translates to the court. Jaylen Brown said that he's hoping that fire that Marcus Smart showed in the locker room, that's part of why they love him, and they need that to continue to translate to the court. But to be honest with you, they should be frustrated. They were up by double digits in that game. They had control over the majority of game one, and both times it slipped away, and that was an issue for them in the Toronto series as well. They lost every single third quarter to Toronto. So what I'm expecting to see is not necessarily this individual incident bring this group together. I think they're already a fairly tight-knit group. But all of those emotions that you heard, I expect to see that on the court. I will be a little bit disappointed or a little bit confused if I don't see that anger, that fire translate to them really pushing to get that win and get this series to 2-1.
And Richard, if they can do that, if that does become something that they can put together for an entire game, especially in those third quarter, as Malika points out, do you feel that that could be a real turning point? Or do you think what you have seen in the last few games, what you saw last night during the game, post-game, means that there's deeper issues here?
Well, this is the thing. When you're going in and rewatching the tape, like we already saw the highlights where you had Jimmy Butler tapping a ball, running out of bounds, coming back in, and you see multiple plays and multiple plays of this. So do the Boston Celtics. And then you have the play where Bam Adebayo just basically walks around four people and gets an offensive rebound in a key portion of the game. So to me, Brad Stevens is going to go in. It's like, guys, this isn't hard enough. This isn't good enough. It doesn't matter if people are yelling and screaming. At the end of the day, this isn't the effort that's going to get you out of this round. It ain't going to be the effort that's going to win you a championship. So either we're telling the truth to ourselves or we're lying to ourselves. And right now, their effort, they're lying to themselves. And hopefully that's what the conversation was about.
Right. I agree with you, Richard. But there's one thing that we're all forgetting. Miami has a lot to do with why the Celtics are frustrated. Let's not lose sight of that. They were completely flummoxed by that zone defense in the third quarter. They had trouble penetrating, which is curious since Toronto played every single kind of zone known to man. And think about the first half. What a great job they did on Bam Adebayo. The way to take Bam Adebayo out of his game is to have him put the ball on the floor or make him take a tough turnaround jump shot. He's not there yet. He probably will be someday, but he's not there yet. So yes, I think emotion is important, but you've just got to get the fundamentals of the game down. You've got to figure out how to break a zone, which I'm sure drives Brad Stevens crazy. I'm sure he couldn't believe that his team couldn't do a better job of that.
And to your point, Jackie, the Heat do have something to do with it. In fact, 34-year-old NBA vet yes. Goran Dragic has been the unsung hero here. Last night, he was Miami's leading scorer. 25 points. He scored 7 huge points for Miami in the final 2 minutes and change. Malika, the Heat haven't forgotten how big a part of their team the Dragon is. What have players been telling you about his role on their team?
It's hard to convey, Rachel, just how much the Heat love this guy. I mean, Jimmy Butler especially has grown really, really close with Goran Dragic, and to the point that Eric Spoelstra described them as the odd couple to me. They're just always palling around together. He says that he feels like Goran actually helped have Jimmy Butler have just a better assimilation into the group. He said he helped him just kind of get to know his role around the team. And the other day when I was at practice and Jimmy Butler was shooting, every time Jimmy Butler hit a three, he yelled Zoran, which is the name of Goran's brother. So everyone loves him in the locker room, but also everyone really knows he's super important on the court. He sparked their offense last night. He sparked their offense in multiple games. Other teams know that he is a defensive, he's a threat. They need to defend him incredibly tightly. So his secret, his impact is no longer a well-kept secret.
Yeah, the nicknames they have for each other, it's amazing. And Goran's been through it with this team, right? There were some tough years there in Miami while they were trying to figure out contract, cap situation, players not living up to management's expectations. Goran has been there through all of that. He knows exactly what he is fighting for here. Malika, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again soon. And I want to get to what The Jump recommends for today. Jackie Mack penned such a great piece on the six teams that have done what so many have found impossible. Stop LeBron James in the playoffs. How do you stop one of the greatest players of all time in the postseason? You can head over to ESPN.com or the app to read Jackie's piece and then stay with us because after the break, Jackie's going to talk about it live in person. We will discuss how LeBron not only will handle these Western Conference Finals, but how he'll react to being the MVP runner-up. Jealousy keeps blossoming, hey, let it box me in.
The Jump is presented by Best Buy. If you can't be there, feel there. Bring the game home when you upgrade to a big Sony TV today.
It's time for this week's Ultra Moment, brought to you by Michelob Ultra.
Working against Butler, got downhill, couldn't punch it. Bam says, get it out of here. Team. James drives down the lane and flushes. A near perfect start for the Lakers. They've scored 10 straight points and already have a double figure lead. Two on the shot clock. Hoists an off balance jumper. Oh! It finds net! Jokic with an unorthodox one footed step back at the end of the shot clock. Just another bucket for him.
Welcome back to The Jump. I do want to circle back to the big news from today. Giannis Antetokounmpo, it is official. He has earned his second straight MVP award. He had the most statistically efficient season in NBA history. Not this year, not among all active players, in NBA history. He's also the third player to ever win both MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same season. But as Giannis tells the great Ernie Johnson, it's not enough for him moving forward.
So I guess last year when you said you can't call me MVP until I've done it twice, now we can call you the MVP, huh?
No, not yet. not yet. I got to set a goal, which I don't know the goal, what the goal is right now. Actually, I know what the goal is. Don't call me MVP. Don't call me two times MVP until I'm a champion.
Now, I completely believe Giannis is genuine when he says that. We know how competitive he is. He also did, however, just tweet out a photo with a photoshopped New York Times of it saying, two-time MVP on a private jet. So you got to respect the flex there. Richard, what more can Giannis accomplish to get so that he can get to his ultimate goal? Because I 100% buy it. He is not just happy with this.
No. And that's what makes him so special. You know, ever since he came into the league, it was always about how he can be different. You've seen the weight and the muscles that he's added. You've seen, you know, the way he's added things to his game over the period of time. And I think he just needs to continue to grow. We know what it is. We know it's free throws. We know it's late game shooting. Those are the things that are going to really help him. And we were talking off camera. One of the reasons why he won this MVP is because they were so efficient. There wasn't a lot of close games for them in the regular season. But in the postseason, there's close games. And that's when free throw shooting and jump shots become critical. And so he is a champion. He is a champion. He is an MVP. He just needs to get that ring, and I think it's going to be the teammates that he has around him that would help facilitate that.
I agree, Richard. You can always use a little more help if you're Giannis, but, you know, they're such a heavy three-point shooting team, guys. They talk about that all the time. Mike Budenholzer told me a bunch of times, I love it when Giannis shoot those threes. If I'm Giannis, okay, I'll work on my three-point shooting, but you know what else I'm going to work on? My mid-range 12 to 14-foot
yes.
jumper. Because if I can hit that late in games, that's going to change the way teams defend me. And I think he can do it. I think he'll concentrate on that. We forget how young these guys are and how little basketball Giannis played compared to the guys that start playing AAU basketball in the United States at the age of 4.5, you know? So I think there's room to grow there, but that perimeter shot to me for Giannis is so important to the next step. And I think even more so than the three-point shooting.
I could not agree more. Giannis, I think, would also be the first one to tell you he's got to add to his game for the Bucks to win a title. Richard mentioned the teammates. There are other maneuvers and things that they could do. The reporting right now is that Coach Mike Budenholzer will stay with that team. So we will see that. That won't be an adjustment, it looks like, but we will see what other adjustments they'll make. Of course, the biggest adjustment is Giannis staying with the Bucks or not. He discussed today his recent meeting with Bucks ownership. This is what he said. He said, it's simple. You've got to be better than you were last year. If you don't win the whole thing, you've got to be better. If you win the whole thing, you got to be better anyway and do it again. So for our team has to be better. He said, I left the meeting encouraged. I was happy with what we discussed. And this is so important. He said, for now, we are on the same page. So we'll keep watching this. I want to make it clear. We're going to talk about LeBron and MVP in a minute. I want to make it clear. Giannis doesn't have to sign the Supermax to say that he's not leaving. Those are two separate things. All right, let's move on to LeBron, because when there is an MVP winner, there is also someone who comes in second. Four-time MVP LeBron James finished as runner-up for the fourth time in his career today. He's also finished third three times, so the resume is pretty good there. Jackie, how do you think LeBron will internalize, react to this finish? I know that he knew that this was coming. It's not like he woke up today and was like, oh, my God, Giannis is the MVP. I can't believe it. But still, you know, athletes use things to fuel him. How do you think he will use that the rest of this postseason?
Well, LeBron James, in the great tradition of Michael Jordan, always has slights, real or perceived. And I love the way elite athletes do this. They use it as inner motivation. He has a list, apparently. I imagine sometimes all of us have been on it at one point. Maybe not you, Richard. And I think, here's the thing. If you ask LeBron James, would you rather be the finals MVP or the regular season MVP? We all know the answer, don't we?
Yeah. Let's stay tuned. No, we know the answer. And you know, look, as great players like Giannis and Bron and all the great players that have won MVPs recently, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, they want to win. They understand that those individual things, although they are great and they are put them in a great position for larger conversations, if they don't win a championship, that's how they judge themselves. They know that that's what they want to do. So LeBron is facing a bigger goal. Rachel brought up a point earlier about how we should adjust these regular season awards, not because we want to give out more awards, but because sometimes they're different. Statistically, he had one of the greatest seasons in NBA history, but not a lot of people would have picked him as the best player in basketball or the team to or an individual that you would want to lead your team to a championship, because there are some holes in his game.
And there's stuff for LeBron to prove this season also, right? 35 years old, if he is able to win a title this year, that is only going to add to his very impressive resume. All right. Thanks, Jackie Mack. Thank you, Richard Jefferson. The Jump is back Monday. See you guys.